Hi, it's Anoushka. Happy New Year. We're all hoping that 2021, with not just one, but potentially several vaccines, is going to be a happier year. This week, we've been playing repeats from 2020, and we're going to finish the run today, not with Today in Focus, but a really brilliant episode from our sister podcast in Australia, Full Story. This is presented by the fabulous Laura Murphy Oates, and it is all about the clitoris.
I'm Laura Murphy Oates, and this is The Full Story.
Do I remember when I found out the clitoris was as big as it was?
This week at Full Story, we've been asking people a question.
Do I remember when I found out the size of the clitoris? Answer, no.
Turns out a surprising amount of people of all ages don't really know all that much about the clitoris.
So I was about 19 years old when I found out the actual size of a clitoris compared to what I'd been taught and shown, I guess, my whole life.
Hello. So I only found out what a clitoris looks like maybe about 2 weeks ago, and I'm 34 years old.
I don't know if I know the size of the clitoris, really. Does anyone? Is that information out there?
To find out why that is, we spoke to a bunch of regular people who have vaginas.
And it was the most exciting thing because I understood myself a little bit more. I found out it was the only part of the human body designed only for pleasure.
I honestly couldn't recall seeing a diagram or a drawing of it, even in high school.
Plus, the Australian scientists and artists dedicated to demystifying the clitoris.
You know, it was pretty clear that what we were looking at was kind of a shadow of an organ rather than really the organ itself, you know, in most of our anatomies.
Today, why the clitoris has been ignored.
The clitoris isn't really a feature player, and I think it should be.
I embarrassingly did not think about the clitoris at all until probably much later than I should have.
Calla Wahlquist is a reporter at Guardian Australia.
And then when I later realised it did exist, I kind of just thought of it as like a small sensitive area. I never really thought about it as anything more than that.
So I don't remember the first time, but I'm sure I thought it was just this little small nodule at the top of the labia.
Gabrielle Jackson is an associate editor at Guardian Australia and has written a book on women's health called Pain and Prejudice.
And it wasn't until kind of the last 5 or 6 years when I started thinking and researching about my book on pain and what medicine knows about women's bodies that I discovered that wasn't the full clitoris and that it wasn't even well known in medicine. And then I discovered that it wasn't until the 90s that the existence of the full organ of the clitoris was confirmed.
The 1990s.
Yes. Well, I should clarify, there was a German anatomist in the 1840s who did describe the organ's full internal structure, including the fact that it's made up of erectile tissue, but somehow that was just later forgotten and left out of textbooks. And it took until the 1990s, 1998, Australia's first female urologist, a woman by the name of Helen O'Connell, to correct this misunderstanding. Or convenient memory loss, I should say.
Tell me about this woman, this miraculous woman.
Excellent. Hello, Calla.
So I spoke to Professor O'Connell for this story.
It's only audio. Oh, it's a podcast. Good. I don't have to worry about the camera. All getting my hair blown in the morning and what my makeup looks like. Okay, excellent.
All right, let's get going. I'm just going to press record on my end.
And so I'm pressing record on this end.
Right. So
Professor O'Connell, explain to me.
So she said that when she was studying medicine in the 1980s and she'd look in her anatomy textbooks and it would have a full anatomical diagram of the penis and all associated nerves, and there would just be sort of almost a footnote about the clitoris.
Females generally were sort of looked at as other. So there's the norm, which is the male, and then we've got kind of this subset over here who are not male.
Professor O'Connell said that she knew that this information was incomplete because as a woman, she has a clitoris. She knew there was more to it. So she started dissecting cadavers. She actually initially started by studying the nerves that went from the spine into the clitoris. And she found that there was this really huge number of nerves that were going through to what was presumed to be quite a small organ. So she thought, clearly this is bigger than anticipated. So she did a second study, which involved a series of like very careful dissections. And she discovered the full shape of the clitoris.
What does the clitoris look like? What is the clitoris?
So it's an organ, and the bit that you see, the little kind of pea-shaped nodule type thing, that's the glands. That's just the very tip of it. Mm-hmm. And it has two kind of leg-like structures. And one of these structures is called the crura, and they wrap quite tightly around the vaginal wall when the clitoris is aroused and erect. And then it's got two bulb-like structures called the vestibular bulbs, and they sit underneath the labia, and they also become erect when aroused.
To me, it looks almost like kind of a squid, and I've also heard it described as like a set of human lungs, if you can imagine that.
Ooh.
It doesn't sound as awful as I'm saying. It kind of is almost like, just think of the shape of an orchid, like with those sort of like bigger petals and then some smaller final petals at the top. That's really the shape of the clitoris.
I thought it looked like a wishbone, like in a chicken.
Oh, yeah, I thought a wishbone with earrings.
That's a good one.
I think it's important to say that the clitoris has 8,000 nerve endings. That is a lot. Actually, it's more than double the number of nerve endings in the penis, and it's more than any other organ in the human body.
Mm.
And its only job is pleasure. That's it.
Mm. So what do we know about that? What do we know about how it works?
So much of the clitoris is made of erectile tissue, and what we know is that when it becomes aroused, that erectile tissue, particularly in the bulbs, will expand. And because of its positioning sort of around the labia, that expansion results in sort of a tightening of the vagina, and also means that you can stimulate that erectile tissue through penetration of the vagina.
Mm. So it gets erect and flaccid like a penis does?
Yes, exactly like.
This feels like such an embarrassing question to ask. How does that lead to an orgasm? What is the science behind that? What do we know?
Well, the interesting thing when you read about the female orgasm, you see this distinction constantly between a clitoral orgasm and a vaginal orgasm. But when you look at Professor O'Connell's work, you realise that there really isn't a difference. It's all a clitoral orgasm. And every person with a vagina is obviously going to be different in what they feel because our body parts are all shaped differently. And so things are going to be different depending on where your clitoris wraps around your vagina or where it's most in contact with your labia. So that's going to affect where you are most sensitive or aroused and what you feel and where you get pleasure from.
And actually in the mid-2000s, Professor O'Connell did some preliminary studies, and she was also clear to say that this, you know, there's still more work to be done in this area. But looking within the vaginal wall and around the vaginal wall for another patch of erectile tissue or anything that could be considered the G-spot, which is the thing that people talk about being connected to a vaginal orgasm.
We did not really find something We didn't find something in the anterior vaginal wall that you say is discrete structure, anything like the clitoris.
And what she said is she's not going to, at this point, rule it out because she's very cautious, but there is no, like, patch of tissue or spot that is highly dense with nerves, like the clitoris, within the vagina. So it does appear that when people talk about G-spots or those kind of orgasms, that what they're talking about is contact or kind of interaction with the clitoral bulbs, which are stretched around the vagina, which have become engorged due to arousal, and not actually because they have managed to hit some other magical spot.
So, Kella, is what you're telling me is that the G-spot, as far as we know from the science that's been done so far, just doesn't exist?
Yes. But importantly, those clitoral bulbs are only going to be engorged if the clitoris is already aroused. Basically, she has scientifically proven the importance of foreplay, which is a thing that we all already knew. But it's good to have it, you know, in peer-reviewed papers.
You know, ignoring the clitoris and acting like that's not the focus for orgasm is just not going to happen.
I feel like I owe so much to this woman. First, finding out what the clitoris even looks like. Secondly, finding out that this G-spot that I've been looking for so many years may not exist, really.
Yeah, there is no miracle when it comes to sex with women. You have to experiment.
Next, why medicine has ignored the clitoris for so long. Okay, so as you've both explained, we only found out some of the very basic facts about the clitoris in the past few decades and for some in the past few years. Why has it taken so long to find out about this? I mean, it's a part of our bodies. Why don't we know more about it?
I think it goes back to the history of medicine itself. Medicine has traditionally viewed the female body as just a deficient form of the male body. And so from the very beginnings of medicine, that the major difference in women were that they had a uterus, and therefore they kind of put everything that happened to women that didn't happen to men down to the uterus. It was almost like because a woman could reproduce, she should reproduce. And medicine really reinforced that role of the woman as wife and mother. And female sexuality has been really closely linked to female illness throughout the past centuries. We've all heard of hysteria. Hysteria at some times was thought to be caused by a woman not having enough sex and also by having too much sex or by masturbating.
Firstly, sexuality is sort of enshrouded in strange cultural stuff, isn't it? Secrecy, shame, you know, outrageous advertising.
Professor O'Connell described there as being almost like a history of cultural misogyny in medicine, which meant there was just a lot of ignorance about and even animosity towards women's bodies.
That's one thing. And then,
in particular, Professor O'Connell singled out a prominent 19th century English gynaecologist and surgeon. His name was
Isaac Baker Brown.
Isaac Baker Brown.
Who thinks he's doing the right thing?
He really pushed this idea of surgically removing the clitoris to cure just a dizzying array of things.
He thinks that he's curing epilepsy, hysteria, catalepsy, we don't even know what that is, you know, presumably someone does historically, you know, all these female conditions. And so I suspect if you kind of read between the lines that they were masturbating and because of their health issues, they weren't hiding it well enough. You know, they were so distressed with their health problems that their masturbation had become evident to others. And the bogey in the room was the organ, where it's nothing to do with the organ, but the organ had half a chance of soothing them. It is my kind of take on why this strange thing happened in the middle of the 19th century.
She says that there was this weird dichotomy where Western medicine would, on the one hand, say that the clitoris is a completely useless organ, you don't need to know anything about it, and on the other hand, it would attribute to a whole range of emotional and psychological and other problems.
Since Professor O'Connell did this research, this groundbreaking research in the 90s, has there been a big change? Have we seen a shift in our understanding about clitorises?
I mean, the really great thing that has been able to happen since her research is that doctors have been able to restore sexual function to women who have had female genital mutilation committed to them. So there's been real strides forward in women who have undergone that horrific thing that, you know, Western medicine used to do too. So that is a great thing, but not much else has changed.
Professor O'Connell recently wrote an editorial for the Australian and New Zealand Journal of Obstetrics and Gynaecology, in which she said that there hadn't been enough research and there hadn't really been enough studies in this area since she did that really big work in the 1990s. She conducted a literature review dating back to 1947 and found that in the journal that she was writing, the editorial, there'd only been three articles which referred to clitoral anatomy and function, and none of them contained a descriptive anatomy of the clitoris. And then when she expanded that to search international journals, she found that there'd only been 930 articles that mentioned the anatomy and function of the clitoris. And this is, again, dating back to 1947. This is over about 80 years. And just 11 of those were on the anatomical dissection of the clitoris and its nerve patterns. Her point was that there hasn't been a big take-up of research in this area. There is still a lot of research that's lacking.
So, unfortunately, not much else has changed. And not much else in attitudes has changed. You know, if you compare it to male sexual function or to penises, in 2018, for example, there were almost 1,954 clinical studies looking at erectile dysfunction. And 393 on painful sex in women. And erectile dysfunction, while not great, isn't actually painful. So I just think there's a huge disparity in how medicine and how society at large prioritises sexual pleasure for men and sexual pain in women and other people.
And Professor O'Connell said that she had even received some negative feedback from her own profession.
I had a medical student. She won a prize for doing a project with me where she looked at the support mechanism for the clitoris. She won this prize and I was at a dinner with some senior clinicians, and the very senior figure directly across from me, and, you know, I was her supervisor, I don't think he knew that because her name was on the prize, thought that her work was voyeurism, you know? She's doing scientific research about anatomy, and that in his world, you know, so the cultural stuff is so, it's so complex, isn't it?
Well, I actually spoke to the editor who commissioned Professor O'Connell to write that editorial, and she said her inbox had remained pretty silent in the weeks after it was published, suspiciously so. And she said she fears that obstetricians and gynecologists are a bit embarrassed to talk about it, embarrassed to write in to the journal with any views they may have. And that could potentially mean that they're not comfortable talking to their patients about it either.
I think this is a really big issue, and it's wider than medicine. You know, a third of women report having painful sex, and a lot of them don't ever report that to their doctor. And this comes from society being really nervous of talking about sexual health, especially when it comes to women. And there was a column just a few years ago in a major Australian publication saying that any man who becomes a gynecologist must be a creep. And an example that this woman gave in her column was that her friend's obstetrician asked her about her sexual activity after childbirth. Having sex after childbirth is a really big issue and it's a very important issue. And if doctors are reading this, of course they might be embarrassed to bring it up with their female clients if they think that marks them as a creep or a pervert in some way. So we can't leave this up to medicine to solve it. We have to make the change in society for both doctors and patients to feel comfortable to bring up this aspect of their health.
Is there any positive news in terms of the scientific world understanding the clitoris, promoting education of the clitoris?
There is some movement and some good news in parts of medicine. For example, Professor O'Connell said that she was in India earlier this year and it was a room full of doctors discussing methods of undertaking urethroplasty, and they were discussing the importance of maintaining clitoral function, so thinking about where you do that surgery so you don't impact any nerves or impact clitoral function at all.
But, you know, that was incredibly uplifting to see, wow, firstly, they're doing the urethroplasty better, using anatomy to preserve female sexual function. That was really, really good.
In other words, they're only just looking at how to do some of these procedures on women without cutting through these thousands of nerves that are part of the clitoris.
Yes, which doesn't sound like it should be a breakthrough. That sounds like that should be a given. But even in prostate surgery, Professor O'Connell said that sort of surgical technique to mean that you don't impact nerves or impact sexual function in any way. That's a pretty new technique. So it's great that it's happening across genders.
I think a really positive development has been outside medicine, because there's been these art movements. I saw at the Mona in Tasmania a great wall of vaginas, which were actually vulvas, but, you know, one step at a time.
Mm. I own the vagina soap from Mona. I have one of those in my house.
Oh, my God, how wonderful. Isn't it amazing? I was fascinated. I stood there for at least an hour looking at them. I thought it was so beautiful. And I was at All About Women a few years ago, and there was this giant gold glitter clitoris that was like as tall as a human, called the glitoris, and it was just so beautiful. And people were fascinated. You could see women of all ages just stopping and staring at it. And I think that has to lead the change for the rest of us.
There is this whole movement outside of medicine around clitoracy, and you can see it in social media in particular. It really like picks up these, you know, young women talking about the clitoris and talking about sexual function. And what's happening in the art space with projects like the clitoris, the enormous gold clitoris by an Australian, is almost ahead in some ways of what medicine says. I spoke to the person who made the clitoris, and she told me that she had doctors come up to her and be like, I didn't know this until I saw you dancing with the giant gold glittery version at Mardi Gras.
Much like the clitoris, it is a multi-pronged thing.
Very good, Laura, very good.
It's a multi-pronged thing. We've got science world, the art world, we've got movements going all throughout society to try and educate people. Where would you like this to end? What would you like to see in terms of education around the clitoris going forward?
I want sexual health to be seen as part of our health. Our well-being cannot be separated from our sexual health. They are very, very intricately aligned. A person's sexuality, and whatever that means to you, because it is a totally individual thing, is really a part of our sense of self. And we seem to appreciate this in men, but not women. Like, women have just historically been expected to serve man's sexuality without any concern for her own. And I think another really important aspect of understanding sexual health is understanding not just what's bad. We know STIs are bad and rape is bad and you know, horrific porn is bad, but we need to know what's good. Mm. There's a famous psychologist called Esther Perel, who's kind of a bit of a sex philosopher, quote unquote. And she gave this great analogy about food. And she's like, everyone knows that to be healthy, you have to eat healthy food. Imagine if you only knew what was bad. So don't eat deep fried Mars bars. Don't eat hamburgers three times a day. but no one ever told you what was actually healthy. And that's what I think we're missing about sexual health. We don't know what the fruit and veg of sexual health is, and we need to know, and I think that that is a major priority.
Ali Sebastian Wolfe, the artist who made The Glitterous, said this great comment, which is that her aim is for art about clitorises to be as passé as art about penises would be, that she wants it to become such common knowledge that it's like done.
Mm.
Every child has been able to draw a penis, maybe not 100% anatomically accurately, but has been able to draw the basic shape since like, what, 7, 8,
mm-hmm.
younger? And I don't know many adult women who would be able to draw the clitoris.
Mm. So the measure of success is when we see the clitoris drawn on school desks around Australia and the world.
Yeah, clit graffiti, that's what we're aiming for.
Okay, Gavs and Keller, thank you so much for this education on the clitoris.
Thanks. I'm sure we won't live to regret it.
Thanks, Laura.
And for teaching me that there's no G-spot. Mind blown.
That was Laura Murphy-Oates with Guardian Australia reporter Calla Walquist and associate news editor Gabrielle Jackson. Do read Calla's piece on why the clitoris was ignored by medical science at theguardian.com, and also check out Gabrielle's book Pain and Prejudice. You can also read an edited extract on the website. Do also subscribe to the Full Story podcast. It's fantastic. That is it for today. This episode was produced by Ellen Leibater, Karishma Luthria and Joe Koning. Guardian Australia's head of audio is Miles Martignoni. Many thanks to all of them. That is it for this week of Repeats. I hope you've had a fabulous Christmas and New Year. We'll be back on Monday.